wish and wish again that I was back in the town where I was born. There's a farm in Michigan, and I'd like to fish again in the river that flows beside the fields of waving corn. A lonesome soul am I.
Michigan is the greatest state. Here we are in our second attempt at revivifying the old podcasts. There was a suggestion made to put these on some sort of RSS feed or in regular podcast feeds and the like, and I think we're going to be doing that. I just haven't got to it yet, so for now they'll just appear on YouTube and on the blog itself, and on the, of course, the everything is mirrored over at Substack. Now, speaking of other talks that I did, and a talk that's not yet banned at YouTube, although I expect it to be banned, the top five reasons science is broken. I list as number two the expansion team effect and the corruption of money. Woke and die is first, of course, which is corrosive and destructive of everything it touches. But the expansion team effect is also very important. We need to understand it. Money swells and pushes into science, you know, like a tsunami, and it forms pools, which become the breeding grounds of scientists. And the larger these pools, the more scientists are formed, naturally. There has been so much money forced into the system, you know, the last 50, 60, 70 years. You could now find a scientist, that is, to support just about any contention you want to push, any solution you want to push if you're a ruler. And this is, of course, easier the more money and the power you have to support this contention. So when the amounts of money become large enough, they become sort of proof that the areas of study are both legitimate and true. The money itself becomes proof, for one, because that money is funneled to discover scientists who support the ideas. It's easy enough to do. There's so many scientists in the expansion team. For a second reason, the money itself is an argument, sort of like how journalists hang on to Bill Gates's word because he's rich. They hope in some, you know, mysterious and vague way that they'll be the beneficiary of his largesse. And so they accord him much greater weight than they would give anybody else. Now, I want to make clear here, this is not a conspiracy. It's not that scientists come running with the herd because they hope to become rich. It's because they, you know, scientists, being human, naturally run with the herd, and herds have to find life-giving water, money, just like everybody else. Now, once the herd grows, it self-perpetuates. The size of the herd itself, is all it takes to convince others that all is well. We saw that yesterday. Research, as it is called, bursts forth. And, you know, like the herd itself, the sheer massiveness of the entire thing is enough to convince others of the authority. So let's talk about another paper. Enter the serial herd leader, The Lancet. We've done The Lancet papers. I don't know how many Lancet papers we've done over the years. At least dozens. And their herd-reviewed paper, the 2022 report of the Lancet Countdown on Health and Climate Change. Health at the Mercy of Fossil Fuels. That's the title, that whole title. By Marina Romanello, I don't know how to pronounce her name, Romanello, and a herd of others, just a slew of others. This is a now annual report of theirs, and it's like exactly like the paper we looked at yesterday. It's advocacy masquerading as science. So we'll only talk a little bit about that advocacy angle, because you can go back and listen to yesterday's podcast or read the thing, but we're going to talk more about how they fool themselves. Here's a quote from the opening. Quote, climate change is undermining every dimension of global health monitored, increasing the fragility of global systems that health depends on, and increasing the vulnerability of populations to the coexisting geopolitical energy and cost of living crises, end quote. What can you say? It's not logically impossible that if the weather changes, every dimension of global health will be undermined, as they say. But it is absurd to say so. It's absurd. By the way, a changing climate means nothing in itself. It's the weather that counts. People experience weather, not the climate. Hence, I always emphasize the weather. So it is absolutely nonsense to say that every dimension of global health is imperiled and undermined because of a changing climate. It's just absurd. It's not impossible. I want to stress that it's not logically impossible, but it is absolutely absurd. And now, we've used this example before, humble as it is, but it's no less valuable for that. Every winter, tens of thousands of Northerners, maybe even hundreds of thousands, I don't know what the number is, but they trek southward to Florida and Arizona and places like this, and they do this to gain tens, 10s of degrees of temperature. Not just a fraction or two of a degree as promised by global warming models that might someday, perhaps, who knows, get here, but tens of degrees, raw heat. And they do this for their health. They go south for their health. If just increasing temperatures slightly was enough to be as deleterious to health as the Lancet's experts would have it, we should find a huge increase in death rates as we move from Green Bay to Tampa Bay. Do we? We do not. Now, you might ask yourself, how could something so simple, so easily verifiable, so easily seen, these facts, have been ignored by this herd of experts? Well, easy, really easy. Models. Models, which they're forbidden to question or doubt, because doing so makes one into a denier. These health experts must accept the word of climate experts, which means taking their climate models as is, without possibility of doubt. You will search for days. I mean, you could search in vain to find even a hint of a whisper, of a rumor of doubt of these climate models by the health experts. The climate models then become input, usually directly, but sometimes indirectly, into the health experts' own models. And of course, climate experts will not and must not question the health experts' models with all their wee p-values and the like. Nor must any other experts outside health and climate question either of them, either. Questioning just is not part of the expertocracy. Everybody is in their little silos and taken to be experts, and you may not question it, otherwise you become a denier. Now, what I call the multiplication of uncertainties is completely ignored. Now, I have a link to this article, which you should read if you don't remember this thing. But think about it this way. The data that goes into both climate and health models has some uncertainty attached to it. More so, of course, for climate models. The data itself is not certain that drive these models. This uncertainty is ignored. The climate models, on top of all this, also have uncertainty. That is ignored. The model's output is fed into the health models as if it is perfect. And the health models themselves have uncertainty, which is also ignored. Now, the end result should be a multiplication of uncertainties at each step in this kind of a thing, such that there should not be much, if any, trust left in this long string of modeling. There should be immense doubt. However, there is none. Doubt is not allowed. Doubt is disloyal. The enormous mass of research, as I say, becomes its own proof of its correctness. The whole becomes an appeal to the swelling bureaucracy, a fallacy in the same line as appeal to authority, a well-beloved fallacy at that. Now, I'm just going to give one example from the paper. It's somewhat long. To prove my contention, just stick with me on this. Here's a quote. Quote, insufficient climate change adaptation efforts have left health systems vulnerable to climate change-related health hazards. I'll stop there with end quote. That's just false. It's absurd. Of course, health systems are adapting all the time to all sorts of changes and pressures. So this is absurd. Okay, back to the quote. Only 48 of 95 countries have assessed their climate change adaptation needs. And only 63% of countries reported high to very high implementation status for their health emergency management in 2021. Increasing adaptation to climate change has the potential to simultaneously improve the capacity of health systems to manage both future infectious disease outbreaks and other health emergencies, end quote. Now, if that isn't as pure an instantiation of bureaucracy as you've seen, then you just don't know bureaucracy. What is all this nonsense, these health adaptation needs in 63%, 48 out of 95? In other words, there's some bureaucratic form that's being filled out that checks boxes and all this kind of stuff that committees and each country are filling out and reporting back. It's just a lot of nonsense. It's just pure bureaucratic nonsense. And let me just prove it to you how easy it is to lie to oneself. Just how easy it is to lie to oneself. So they have a picture. You can go on the blog and look at this. It's the percentage point change in reporting something called moderate to severe food insecurity. Now, this is the percentage point change in reporting moderate to severe food insecurity. Now, what the hell is that? In 2014, there's like a 9% change, and it goes up to 10% by 2015, and boom, 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 up to 2020, it's like 15, 16% increase in this reporting of moderate to severe food insecurity. Now, here's what you need to understand. This is very important. This is the proof that it's the bureaucracy we're dealing with here. By food insecurity, they do not mean lack of food or lack of eating or starvation or anything like that. This food insecurity is a derived measure, not a real one. It is a model. It is a model. It is a derived measure. It is only meant as proof of how bad things are known to be in the minds of researchers when they can't find actual bad things like famines. So they make things like this food insecurity up to reassure themselves they're right. And we can prove this to ourselves extremely easily. Here's a contrast. The actual rice and corn production. I think I'm going to do just corn production. I think I have a picture of just corn production throughout the world, from several major countries, India, Russia, China, United States, from 1960, I think it is. This is from Our World in Data until now. It is pretty much an increase, if you like. You can even call it an exponential increase. There's a nice curve sloping upwards in an exponential fashion. Corn production has done nothing but increase, and increase again. A couple of times, years here and there, it decreases a little bit, but overall, it has increased dramatically. Now, this is the same, you can see the same signal in rice and nuts and cereals and so forth, all available at the link on the blog. So the model, this food insecurity model to the Lancet, to the experts at the Lancet, becomes realer than reality. So they've ignored the very simple, the very easy to find. I mean, it took me 30 seconds, perhaps even less, to find the reality. The reality is that food is everywhere. Food production is everywhere up in food security, insecurity, this model is nothing to do with reality. The deadly sin of reification has been committed and sworn to by a herd of scientists. The model has become realer than reality. This happens in science time and again, where their own views of the way the world should work replace the way the world does work. And the mass itself, the very mass of scientists, are what become the agent that convinces others that this sin is instead a virtue. Well, that's it until this time. Happy trails until we meet again.
Who cares about the clouds? when we're together. Just sing a song and think about sunny weather. Happy trails to you. Till we meet again.